From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, questions remain over what exactly Governor Cuomo's special prosecutor is investigating in response to a federal probe. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on his conversation with Assembly Minority Leader Ryan Kolb about the continuing federal investigation. And New York joins a worldwide effort to discourage tobacco use. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. It's been over a month since Governor Andrew Cuomo hired a special investigator in response to a federal probe of his Buffalo Billion project and other economic development programs. So far, no contract with former prosecutor Bart Schwartz has been released, and questions remain about what exactly he is investigating. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
On April 29th, the same day that Governor Cuomo revealed that U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara had subpoenaed records related to his economic development programs, Cuomo announced that he'd also hired his own investigator, Bart Schwartz, a former prosecutor who served under Rudy Giuliani when Giuliani was U.S. Attorney.
We started our own investigation with a private investigator who was from the U.S. Attorney's office originally, Mr. Bart Schwartz, because we want to make sure that there was nothing done improper. If something improper was done, then we want to make sure the corrective action is taken.
Schwartz, in a statement at the time, said there was reason to believe that fraud had occurred by lobbyists and former state employees, and he said he would review all grants and approvals of contracts and operations of the Buffalo Billion and the other high-tech development programs across the state. It's now been over a month since Schwartz's hiring, but the Cuomo administration has not said how much Schwartz will be paid or release terms of his contract, which is financed through public monies. A spokesman for the governor says only that the contract will be finalized and released soon. Governor Cuomo has characterized Schwartz's role in the ongoing probe in different ways at different times. At first, he referred to Schwartz almost as a co-investigator with U.S. Attorney Bharara.
If there's something wrong, I want to know it. And as I said, we will fully prosecute according to the law.
Those remarks earned Cuomo a rebuke from Bharara. The U.S. attorney, in a statement after the former Senate leader was sentenced to prison, said most effective corruption investigations are those that are truly independent. Lately, the governor and his aides have portrayed Schwartz's role as more limited, saying that he will essentially just review contracts and documents that are already public, including any deals that result from a recent state allocation of $485 million more to the Buffalo Billion Solar City Factory project. There was also some confusion about whether Schwartz's final report on the potential fraud in the Cuomo administration will ever be publicly released. Cuomo initially said he wasn't sure.
He is being hired as an independent to do an independent review. I don't know what his standard protocol is. I wouldn't have a problem with it, but I don't know how he operates.
And the governor's top counsel said at that same news conference that it's up to Schwartz to decide whether or not the final report is ever released. A spokesman for the governor later clarified the report will be made public unless it interferes with the U.S. attorney's work.
We don't know what Bart Schwartz's job is,
says John Caney with the reform group Reinvent Albany. He says there are a number of unanswered questions about Schwartz. He says no one outside of Cuomo's inner circle knows the investigator's actual responsibilities, and so we don't really know why he's there.
Schwartz is not independent. His client is the governor, and people are very bad at investigating themselves. So the usefulness of Schwartz being involved seems very, very limited.
Schwartz has hired his own public relations firm to help with media inquiries. But his representative says he can't provide details of Schwartz's contracts or the scope of his investigation and can't really offer any more information beyond Schwartz's brief initial statement issued over 1 month ago. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. This week, you spoke with Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, a Republican. He says it's hard to believe that Governor Andrew Cuomo was unaware of the activities of Joseph Prococo, former top aide to Governor Cuomo, now under investigation for possible conflicts of interest.
Well, Pete Berar, a long time ago, the fighting U.S. attorney, told us to stay tuned. We're all staying tuned. Everybody in Albany is really sitting on pins and needles, waiting to see what happens. Andrew Cuomo has made several pains, that's, I believe, P-A-E-N-S, to his friend Joe Prococo, who he described as the third brother in the Cuomo family. Now, there does appear to be some distance, but there's real distance between the Cuomo people and a man named Todd Howe, who is a lobbyist and very close to the Cuomos, and Cuomo has been eschewing him, leading some people to believe that they're a little bit more afraid of what Howe might say to U.S. investigators than what Prococo may say. But that's all, you know, just sort of the kind of speculation you hear in the halls around. We do know that Preet Bharara has been looking carefully at Andrew Cuomo. I think I saw Andrew Cuomo marching together with Hillary Clinton the other day in a television shot. So when Hillary Clinton was asked whether she would reappoint Preet Bharara, incredibly, this guy has done more to stop corruption in Albany than anybody else. Hillary Clinton said it's too early to tell. Well, you know, I got news for her and for everybody else. Preet Bharara is the best thing since sliced bread to come along, number one. He's the only hope for cleaning up the cesspool of Albany. And the president takes the recommendation of the senior senator of the same party. So if Hillary Clinton is elected, it's going to be Chuck Schumer. And if Chuck Schumer is the Senate Majority Leader, which it looks like he may be, the top guy, she's not going to be in a position to jettison Preet Bharara. I can tell you that right now.
Meanwhile, our Karen DeWitt reporting this week that it's been over a month since Governor Cuomo hired a special investigator himself in response to this federal probe of the Buffalo Billion Project and other economic development programs. So far, no contract with former prosecutor Bart Schwartz has been released, and questions remain about exactly what he's investigating.
Okay, so let's see if we get this right. There are three investigations going on. One is the federal investigation. And that's Preet Bharara, who we just talked about. And that's the one that is the heaviest, as we say. Then comes Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. As you know, AG means almost governor. And that's the way it's been going in New York. And there has not always been the best of blood between Andrew Cuomo and Schneiderman. But particularly offensive to many people was the so-called Moreland Act Commission, which Cuomo inexplicably, which got Preet Bharara real upset, inexplicably ended. We don't know why that happened. There's been a lot of different possibilities offered, but we don't know why. But it got Bharara very upset. That's what started his own investigations. But the AG, Schneiderman, was really sort of left with an empty boat, because he had to go along with Cuomo on the Moreland Act Commission, and he deputized all the people on the commission so they could go look at the legislature is the only way it could be done. Then when Cuomo comes ahead and disbands the commission and says, it's my commission, I can do what I want, it leaves poor Schneiderman standing there, who was supposed to be a partner, looking not like an awful lot of partner. So there are some people, me included, who think that the fact that Schneiderman is now looking at the same kinds of potential corrupt practices Preet Bharara is, indicates that maybe there's a little psychological, in the back of his mind, payback that's going on here.
All at the same time, a new poll finds voters craving reform in state government and would rather not see laws like expanding state gambling by legalizing daily fantasy sports.
David, you know, voters are all over the place. In a recent Siena poll, they found that they liked Andrew Cuomo's integrity. On the other hand, they also said it's time for somebody else. And that means that, you know, they're all over. Now, when you get gambling, inevitably, you know, the images of the prohibition and all the rest happen. We do know now that the gambling industry has pretty much been in the hands of those people who are illegal in terms of doing this stuff. If state takes over, at least they get a cut of the whole thing. We do know also, though, that there are many people, and I've seen them myself with my own eyes, who don't seem to have a lot of money, but who line up to buy tickets in which they will certainly have less chance of winning than being hit by lightning. So whether or not it is milking people of precious resources and becomes a very regressive form of taxation, I don't know. But I do know that I would be very wary of gambling for all of those reasons.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Last week, the U.S. House of Representatives approved updates to the Toxic Substances Control Act, the 40-year-old piece of legislation which provides EPA with authority to regulate commercial chemicals, was considered by many to be ineffective, including Albany area Congressman Paul Tonko. The Democrat worked for more than 2 years to strengthen the law for consumers, but when the bill came from the Senate, Tonko voted against the measure. Tonko explains his vote to the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
The TSCA bill, the Toxic Substance Control Act, dates back to 1976. And everyone across the board, from consumers to environmentalists to the chemical industry advocates, indicated that the measure wasn't working. It was an ineffective law. And in some minor cases, it did work. But there was across the board opinion in agreement that it had to be made much more doable. So as the ranker on the Subcommittee of Environment and the Economy, under which TSCA falls, I got deeply invested in the issue and worked with many to make it better. We had passed a one-house bill last year that put together, I thought, some very good concepts that made the regulatory opportunity all the stronger for EPA and workable so that they had resources and improvements in the bill. The measure then was sent over to the Senate. They did their own version, and it was in conferencing that I think the measure took a major fall backward, which was troublesome. And so having worked so hard on this issue and knowing the need to have an effective piece of legislation were the driving forces to get something done here.
So what were the changes that were made that ultimately you couldn't support the bill in the end?
Well, first let me just indicate that the bill in some ways does improve current law. We give EPA new authority. There's a lower bar for testing. In other words, the EPA enters in for many more chemicals than before. They don't need to go by rule. They can do it by order. And that allows them to gain access with new authority. And, you know, those improvements, I think, are helpful, giving them resources and a more open process. However, very positive step forward that we took to protect public health and the environment, there were multiple provisions that I think undermine progress and make this bill a loss for the American consumer and our environment. The new bill has restrictions on EPA's ability to apply significant new use rules. This is one area of the current law that had actually worked. In other words, they may approve a chemical for a narrow bit of authority in, say, an automobile part. But what this now allows is for them to extend that into other areas of activity, maybe carpeting, sofas, toys. It gives a broader interpretation, which I think can be an anti-outcome as far as the consumer is concerned. There's also a low-priority designation. We had fought for low-hazard. So while something is listed as low-priority, I believe it will give opportunity to the chemical industry to market that with a sense of benignness, where if it were labeled low-hazard, there would be a different approach, there would be a different interpretation by the general public. And then let me just also mention carve-outs. Carve-outs for certain sectors of industry that exempted them from these provisions, which I think offered far too many special interest opportunities here. But the overall primary concern that I had was the introduction and the reach for a new concept, that being a pause preemption. The inclusion of a regulatory pause prevents states from acting for 3.5 years while EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is reviewing a chemical. This is unprecedented in terms of policy. I believe it's misguided. You know, we should not encourage that kind of chemical reform overhaul because I think you're going to see it reach to many, many, many more times into the future. We heard from several states via their attorneys general, via their environmental commissioners, or via their governors. And they were concerned about, you know, taking away that authority that states have. And for many, many chemicals, the states have, through their action, driven a national standard simply because I think when they want to protect their consumers, their residents, and they're aggressive about it, states like New York and California, they drove a national agenda. And so now we, I think, cause a lesser outcome for states that may not be as aggressive simply because those that are very strong and determined in their acts of regulation of chemicals drove a good agenda for various states around the country, for the nation. So I think a strong national chemical program is essential in order to protect Americans. And I was not convinced that the program that will be put into place by this bill justifies the unprecedented new limitations of states' authorities. And it's a very strong driving force that drove my negative vote.
That was Albany area Congressman Paul Tonko speaking with our Lucas Willard about his vote against updates to the U.S. Toxic Substances Control Act. The bill passed the House last week. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The fight against tobacco use is global. Approximately one person dies from a disease caused by tobacco use every 6 seconds around the world. Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports this week New York has joined a worldwide effort to discourage tobacco use.
Today, governments around the world are working to introduce plain packaging to reduce the attractiveness of tobacco products.
The group Human Rights Watch says that in one country alone, Indonesia, nearly 4 million children between 10 and 14 become smokers every year. Despite restrictions on the sale and use of tobacco around the world, billions of cigarettes have found their way into children's hands, thanks to colorful packaging, logos that feign status, and clever marketing techniques by manufacturers. The theme of this year's World No Tobacco Day, get ready for plain packaging. Across New York State, advocates are also supporting an anti-tobacco message aimed at children, which appears in storybook form, Jack and Jill and Tobacco, launched as part of the statewide Seen Enough Tobacco social media campaign. Erin Siniscalli is with St. Peter's Health Partners.
The tobacco industry, we know, is always targeting kids because very few adults start smoking, but kids certainly do at very, unfortunately, too high a rate.
The U.S. Surgeon General calls smoking a pediatric epidemic. In New York State, the average age of a new smoker is 13 years old, and 90% of all adult smokers say they first tried smoking by age 18. Former Albany County legislator and tobacco control advocate Tim Nichols.
I think any person who has stepped inside of a convenience store can't help but notice the large tobacco displays behind the counters at eye level of most kids. You know, this is intentional by the tobacco industry, and we need to take steps as a community to deal with it.
Nichols praises CVS for its 2014 corporate decision to ban sales of all tobacco products and hopes other chains will follow suit. Jeannie Orr, project coordinator for the Capital District Tobacco Free Coalition, notes that 85% of high school students were aware of tobacco-related ads in convenience stores, supermarkets, gas stations, or pharmacies in that same year.
Advertising and promotional activities by tobacco companies have been shown to cause the onset and continuation of smoking among adolescents and young adults.
The World Health Organization, which says 6 million people die needlessly every year as a result of tobacco use, is pushing for plain packaging of tobacco products, calling for restrictions and outright bans on logos, brand images, color schemes, and promotional materials featured on cigarette packs, which already carry graphic health warnings.
Kid goes up to buy candy at the counter, and there's a wall of tobacco products in the back. The tobacco industry spends a lot of money to do that, and they do it because they know that it works. They spend $9.45 billion annually to market to customers. It's become normal. It's like, it's there. It's right next to the ice cream, right next to the candy. So kids think it's a normal part of life and it's not a big deal. It's a legal product. It's okay.
Tobacco giant Philip Morris International and Citizens for Tobacco Rights did not respond to requests for comment. World No Tobacco Day advocates are also urging those who use tobacco products to abstain for a 24-hour period. And there's more at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1623. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.